One. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Llewellyn. I run the services at medcomsnetworking.com. So those are information services, resources, activities for people who work across the globe in and around medical communications, medical education, medical publishing, and the associated businesses. Lots of things going on all the time. A couple of shout outs, particularly for Network Pharma TV, where you'll find hundreds of videos now on all sorts of topics around medcoms, and specifically first medcomsjob.com, which is trying to provide information to people who are interested in joining the business, maybe as a medical writer, account manager, or whatever. And at the moment, we're running a series of first medcoms job webinars talking about issues and topics that should be of interest to people who are interested in learning more about the business and, as I say, maybe getting a job with us. I'm absolutely delighted today that I'm joined by Elena Mayles, Dohind, and Andrea Plant. I'll let them introduce themselves in a minute. What we're talking about basically is the working place, the workplace, and whether Medcom's workplaces actually work for everyone, whether the, you know, it's been an interesting couple of years, and there's been quite a lot of change, both within Medcoms, but more broadly, obviously. So it's just a moment to sort of have a bit of a chat about how we're actually working within Medcoms, sort of working practices and so on. Let's, without further ado, let's get you guys introducing yourselves here. Joe, just start by telling us who you are and what your business does.
Okay, so I'm Jo Hind. I'm the co-founder of Bird Soup. Don't ask me about where the name came from, but there you can
Okay.
maybe. So we are a people transformation consultancy. We've been going for about 7 years now, and really we're around making inclusion a business critical issue. I think our view on the workplace is it's not really working very well for anyone right now. And that we've got a really strong belief that, you know, everyone is talent, not just the chosen few. So we're all around making the workplace better, and we do that in a number of ways, including consultancy, coaching, learning and development, and you know, kind of really working with businesses on their particular challenge rather than just having off the shelf things that people can, you know, just use. So that's who we are, and I'm really excited to be involved in this webinar today.
Okay, great, and thanks for joining us, Joe. Just be clear on this one. You don't specialize in medcoms or even in communications work, do you? But you have got an interest in this sort of an area. But your work is actually much more generic, or is much more wider than that. You talk with lots of different sorts of businesses in
Yeah, we
different
work
areas.
with a whole range of organizations across, you know, multiple sectors and sizes of business. We, you know, we've got a particular interest in women's careers within
Right.
the workplace, and we know that in this sector is quite female biased, so that's a particular interest. And you know, in a previous career, I worked in not medcoms but in media, so I'm kind of familiar with
Exactly.
the kind of agency world.
Exactly. I just like to keep the context clear here. So it's great to have you here and talking to us. We're going to go around. Elena, you're next. And it was interesting that you said, oh, I think your words was female biased, Joe. I think that is an interesting use of the word bias, but I, you know, certainly female dominated. Elena, go on, talk to us about you and your business. Pick up on where Joe went.
Sure. So I'm Elena Mills. I'm the co-founder of The Salve Health. We're a medical affairs specialist consultancy. We only launched in 2020, so we're not very old. And we represent a kind of newer, kind of new generation of medcoms agencies, I guess. We are remote. So we operate with a virtual team of experienced medcoms professionals doing the, you know, the traditional scope of medcoms and also some specialist consulting services. So yeah, remote, no office. All our team are based all around the UK.
Okay, and again, small business, yeah, at the
Small
moment.
business, yes, at the moment, you know, ambitious growth plans, but yeah, at the moment we are a small agile team, all working remotely.
Okay, can I say this? Am I allowed to say this? I'm going to say this anyway, Elena. And a champion of women within medcoms and the broader healthcare communications arena, and you know, workplace for women sort of discussions, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've 70%, just over 70% women in med comms, and also not many women, solely women-owned med comms agencies. So yeah, sort of championing women's progression and women's development in med comms, definitely. That's an interest of mine.
Okay, thanks. And Andrea, so tell us who you are and where you're from.
Well, hello. Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks, Peter and Elena, for inviting me to join this panel. I'm very pleased to be here sharing my story with everybody. I'm Andrea Plant. I'm EVP, Head of Global Operations at Cordex, and Cordex is part of the IPG Health Medcoms network. So we're a pretty big agency in our own right. We're about 100 people, and there are seven other agencies in the IPG Health Medcoms network. Four of us are traditional full service med comms agencies, so four of us do essentially the same similar sort of work. We've also got three that focus on commercial med comms in the US, and then one specializes in regulatory writing. So we've got kind of quite a diverse range of work. I've been in med comms for about 18 and a half years, and at Cordex for 16 of those. I joined as a medical writer and kind of worked my way all up through the medical services pathway and then moved into operations. So I'm now kind of all about what goes on behind the scenes and hopefully making sure that it works well. In terms of kind of our structure, when I joined, we were almost all office-based, and in Oxford. We then spread out to have people in Macclesfield and London, primarily to be able to recruit in those. And Cordex was pretty in, kind of did its own thing at the time, and we gradually kind of became more integrated into the various different iterations of the network, which has ended up as IPG Health Medcoms now. We very early on, so not long after I joined, we started taking on remote workers. So back in 2000 and whatever that was, like seven maybe 2008, we started having remote workers, and it really was pretty unusual at the time in the industry. So we had some kind of like part-time and then full-time remote workers, and obviously that set us up well for the pandemic. By the time the pandemic hit, we had a lot of remote workers. I myself was. We are now, I would say, a combination of hybrid and remote. We don't really have anybody who's full-time office-based.
Okay. I think it's interesting. I don't know how much we're going to argue with each other about things in this, but I think it's quite fun if we can. But something I say, which a lot of people do disagree with me actually, but I think they're rewriting history, is whilst Medcoms was going in the direction of remote working, I would still argue that the majority of Medcoms agencies, when they talked about flexible and remote working pre-pandemic, meant that they'd given people laptops and you could finish off the work at home if you had to go home and finish at home, which is completely not virtual working. I know there's a spectrum, but in the last couple of years, 3 years, that I mean the pandemic did force a lot of, well, it did obviously push everyone home, and it did prove that basically everyone could work virtually. I think it's interesting we were going down the line. I think we probably weren't as far down the line as a community as people like to think of us now, but during the pandemic we went very far down the line. And that has changed the way a lot of businesses are set up. And I don't just want to talk about the remote working today, but Andrea, tell us a little bit more. Maybe let's just start with you. Looking to the last 2 or 3 years, how work has changed, how working practice has changed, remote working, but beyond remote working, if you see what I mean.
So I mean, we did genuinely have remote workers. I was actually a full-time remote worker before the pandemic, so it kind of made it just became a whole lot more sociable for me because suddenly everybody was online and hadn't forgotten about wanted to do things to kind of make contact and what have you.
Sorry, I'm just jumping in there. When you say that, because what happened, and it happened very quickly and very early on, is people were putting in place means of allowing people to socialize online, which hadn't been done before, hadn't they? I mean, it was a very big thing, was we're all online, we're all remote, we have to do things like have weekly quizzes or have technology in place that allows it. I mean, that was a massive acceleration of that sort of aspect of work, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, because we already had quite a lot of remote workers anyway, like genuine remote workers. Anyway, so we did tend to have things in place anyway, like we always used to meet on a Tuesday. We had like a little kind of local town hall at the Oxford office, so we kind of had a meeting where the people in Oxford all met up, and then we also then had a remote workers meet up. So those of us that were remote workers already did meet up together. But I think what happened during the pandemic was that they were all rolled into one because there was no longer a need to have the people who were based in Oxford having their own meeting because we were all based at home. So in that sense, I think it kind of broadened the people who you had informal contacts with. And we've kept some of those up. We still have like a Friday afternoon informal get together for people to drop in if they want to, whether they're in the office or whether they're at home. And we started having like weekly company meetings, whereas normally we probably have like an annual, sorry, a monthly company meeting where it's a combination of, company updates, financial updates, people showcasing some work they've done, and they kind of became a weekly thing just so that people had more touch points. I think it was a lot of it was about making sure that people weren't just there on their own, because it was kind of, and being mindful of the fact that everybody's home situation is different. We heard there was a lot of stuff in the pandemic around, people that had childcare challenges and suddenly they're trying to juggle work and kids and homeschooling and all that kind of stuff. There was people like me who pretty much had it made anyway. It didn't really make much difference, had an office set up at home and I was used to working from home. But we also had a lot of, particularly the kind of the more junior staff who were still living in shared housing. They suddenly their bedroom was their office as well, and they were potentially very isolated. Some people may have just been, living in a bedsit or something like that, and just didn't have that space or that kind of community around them if they could no longer go out and into the office. And just that encroachment of work on your home life, I think, was something that largely got forgotten about during the pandemic. That kind of that,
Exactly.
kind of what about the people that are still living in shared housing? And I don't want my office in my bedroom. I'm sure they didn't either, so.
So where we're at the moment is, would you describe the way Quartix works as hybrid? I mean, you've got
Yeah,
remote
so
workers, but you've got people coming and going from the office and so on. Is it largely whether they want to come into the office or not? Is that the way it works?
we have, and we recruited quite heavily during the pandemic, which I can talk about a bit more later, but so we have some people who've never been in the office either.
Elena, pick up the story from, because if I got my time scales right, you effectively started your business during the pandemic, didn't you?
Yeah, we were planning during the pandemic, and then sort of launched just after the second lockdown. And it is interesting. I was having a chat with Andrea before the webinar started about just where we've come from in terms of Medcom. So I started in 2005 as a medical writer. I relocated down to Basingstoke for that. It was all tower computers. If you wanted to do any out of hours work, you had to come into the office for that. And it really wasn't until probably 2016 that I'd even had a teleconference online like this with a headset, with seeing people. Prior to that, it was all sitting around a conference phone, in a meeting room. And in terms of what that's meant for our business, I think it's fair to say you couldn't have had a remote agency before the advent of video conferencing. So we couldn't have launched in 2015 before this was a norm for people. And also, there's things that have gone alongside that. So people's infrastructure, so broadband in people's houses has become the norm. People familiar with the technology, cloud computing instead of servers, server rooms, and having to kind of VPN in. That was another kind of frustrating time in Medcoms where you kind of had to VPN if you were on site. So just I think the timing of the pandemic kind of aligned with our ability to get on online and video conference. And yeah, I think we were just in the right place at the right time with Liz and I started the cell because we had young families and we wanted to create a new way of working for ourselves and that also worked for people who were our peers, who was, experienced, perhaps had caring responsibilities. And the pandemic and the technology that's gone alongside that has really enabled that for us.
I mean, I do find it interesting having looked back over the last few years, and There were lots of us playing around and doing things virtually or whatever, but the change over the last couple of years has been as absolutely incredible. It's just it's it, yeah, everyone knows that. Joe, to talk to us. I mean, I think we covered that. There was probably a lot of things there we could go into more detail on, and I was just quite keen to sort of like get the scene set there a bit and touch on those things. But Joe, listening to them talking, I mean, talk from your point of view and a broader point of view in terms of how businesses have adapted and how you see it working.
Well, I mean, there's a latest stat that says pre-pandemic, 12% of work was done remotely, and post-pandemic is 44. So I think those numbers speak for itself. I think what's really interesting is there's still quite a big fight going on with some more traditional businesses wanting people back in the office. And there's this, even from a government point of view, actually saying, oh, we need to get back into the physical office. I think, the points that Andrea and both Elena have made, I think what the pandemic did is it shone the light on the fact that even the companies that said they couldn't work remotely discovered that they could. It also shone the light on the differences in, the amount of extra work that women were doing, that, even if everyone was working at home, that wasn't the same for everybody. I think the idea now, particularly with the younger generation, with Gen Z or Gen Z, that they need that interaction, and we've got this generation of young people that sometimes went, straight from remote schooling into remote work without any interaction with a human. And so I think it's frustrating now that people are talking about flexibility, which isn't really true flexibility. It's saying, in some businesses, in some job functions, there is an element of flexibility, but quite often, even an organization that says they do that and they put that in their recruitment ads, it's sometimes down to your line manager. So I think we believe at Birdsuit that the pandemic offered the ability to really revolutionize the way we work. And there's some change that's been made, but we're still trying to, there's still this, oh, we need to go back to before. It's a really weird narrative that's going on. And I think it's like, you need to take this opportunity to change more than just where and when and how we work.
Having said that, can you tease that out a little bit more? I mean, what do you see as the reasons for that sort of conflict? I mean, is it a manager who, I mean, traditionally we've always talked about managers, you have to see that people are doing the work, otherwise you don't believe they're doing the work sort of thing. There's the argument, slightly flippant, I suppose. A lot of, there's a bunch of agencies who are working in offices that the owners own, sort of thing. I mean, I laugh about the fact that I reckon there's a difference between agencies where the owner owns the building and wants their people back in the office versus the people who rent the building and are now downsizing. I think there's an interesting and vaguely entertaining discussion in there. More importantly, possibly, what about juniors coming into a business and needing to learn from each other? I mean, just tease out a little bit. And are those the sorts of issues that you see people wrestling
So
with?
I definitely, I don't think your comment about, owning an office space is flippant at all. And I do think that is a very, that's a real kind of imperative, economically for businesses. I think this idea of, you can only lead or manage people if you can see them speaks more to the lack of leadership development and particular management development that's happened over, a much longer period than that. So managers now are effectively doing much more than managing people's workload. They're dealing with, that whole kind of caring for someone as an individual. So we've got themes like, the stress of work, the whole overworking. So we're overworking compared to most of our European counterparts, but our productivity is still lowest. So what's going on there? Why are we still, working in a system which is, 9 to 5 or, 8 to 6 or whatever it is? Why are we still having to operate in a system where we've got 6 weeks of childcare to try and accommodate during the summer holidays? So, you know, there are, you know, there's still some very structural issues that you know are not helping the workplace. And you know, we're still talking about things like part-time as if that's not contributing as much to the workplace as other people that are full-time. There's still the cult of presenteeism. There's still the cult of, you know, being the last person to leave the real office or the virtual office. There's still people, you know, sending emails out of work time. There's still a ridiculous amount of meetings going on that aren't useful or productive. And, you know, none of those things are really being addressed. And what's happening is really interesting is you've got, you know, the younger generation coming into the workplace that I think about Gen Z, I think represent 14% of the work. And they're basically saying, we've got boundaries. We're not working outside of those times. We're not overworking. And I think they've got it right. And the rest of us have probably got it a bit wrong, actually.
Okay, so Andrea, let's bring you in. You're part of a very big organization, right? And that's had to adapt. You've got lots of people at all sorts of levels. I'm sure there's all sorts of issues that go on with people and all the rest of it. Okay, but just pick on the side. Joe's talking about some interesting stuff there. But you've got to deal with people, and a company like Cordex and the wider IPG organization has to deal with people. And well, just talk to us some about the practical challenges that maybe have been faced and the sorts of solutions you're putting in place to try and maybe keep everybody happy. Is that possible?
You can't please everybody all of the time, can you?
Exactly,
No,
exactly.
I mean, we kind of, I think during the first lockdowns and that, we didn't recruit. So the first lockdown was March, wasn't it? We didn't recruit until the October, I guess, because like everybody else, you know, you thought lockdown was going to be a temporary thing and we were all going to be back to work, everything was going to be fine. Come the October, we had to start recruiting again. So we had to adapt our entry level program, which we already had in place for remote working. And we'd always had that if you came into the entry level training scheme, which was at Cordex at the time, you had to do 3 months in Oxford. That was how we did it the first thing. Obviously that all went out the window. And what we did was we really condensed it and tried to see how we could put in place things that helped those five, as it turned out, new recruits who were completely new to Medcoms to actually get contact with each other and form a little kind of peer group and a friendship group and a support group. And it worked really well. So just for example, things like if you had an e-learn, we got them to kind of set up watch parties and do the e-learn together and, you know, discuss it with each other. And then we would have a follow-up session with somebody more experienced who they could like bring all their questions to and have a chat to. So we were very mindful of the fact that we wanted them to still be able to kind of meet each other and get to know each other. And, you know, we encouraged them to have a like a Teams channel that they spoke to each other that nobody more senior than them was on and things like that, you know, and what have you. Following on from that, I guess we have found that we've had to bring online a lot more training, like formal training that we didn't previously do because it was a sort of thing that you learned by being in the office.
Right, a
So,
sort of osmosis type thing. You're there
yeah,
and you sort of
exactly.
absorb it.
So I think if we're talking specifically about people starting out in Medcoms, I think we've cracked that remote training. We were always transatlantic teams anyway, so there was always some people that were being trained remotely or, you know, working with people that they weren't in the office with. Excuse me. So I think we've got that initial phase and that sort of like formal training really we do very, very well. We then, you know, bring in more and more on the job training. That I think is still harder to do remotely. But when you're doing on the job training in Medcoms, a lot of it is direct feedback. So, you know, you just have to make sure that you don't just kind of, if you're a writer, you don't just cover something in a load of red ink on Word and then fling it back to somebody and hope that they'll kind of get the idea. You know, you have to be more active about setting up a meeting to go through it with them, giving them the time to look at what you've done so that you can continue that training. Time will tell how people who've come through that and are progressing really embedded in an account team continue to do remotely because by and large people aren't in the office. And you know, we've had various discussions about whether junior people should be in the office. And I'm kind of like, I can see the benefit to them being in there, but not if nobody else is. You know, you're not going to learn by osmosis if the more senior people aren't there. So what do? You've got to,
Exactly.
yeah. You know, there's a, you know, you do hear people talk a lot about how, you know, when you're starting out in your career, it's really good for you to be in the office. You do that learning by osmosis. You know, you might be sitting next to somebody who's handling a really challenging client on the phone, and you're just hearing how they're doing that, hopefully well. And you're never going to get that on, you know, by only interacting when you're specifically on a call. But I say that everybody else has got to be in the office some of the time as well for that to
Yeah,
work.
that's a really interesting point, Andrew, because if you are an experienced med comms professional who enjoys the remote working, but you're working for a company that has training junior writers as part of their makeup, then as a senior person, you have to accept that you will need to be in the office. And though absolutely, as you say, the hearing how people have conversations with clients and learning from just being in the office is super, super important. Actually, I think it's quite nice that we've got the variety of businesses in the marketplace now. So we have got remote agencies like ours in the mix. So if you are a more experienced med comms professional, you can perhaps choose, do you want to leave your kind of training responsibilities at the door and be working remotely? So we made a conscious effort not to take on junior writers because we feel that we probably couldn't have an environment that was beneficial to feedback. It is brutal having to feedback to a junior writer remotely where you've got a page of red. I'd much prefer to be doing that in person. So I think having a choice for people in terms of workplace is really important. I actually think it's really nice that we're at this stage where there are newer agencies with newer models versus traditional models.
Yeah, and I think if you're an agency like ours, where you are continuing to do the training, and you know, in all honesty, a lot of people, particularly those who were recruited through the pandemic, aren't kind of interested, don't want to, whatever. They don't. The idea that you would kind of relocate for your career is not really there. You know, I mean, I like you, Elena. I relocated. You know, I stuck everything in storage and I lived with a friend for 3 months when I first went into med comms because I had to relocate. Career might not work out, you know, don't want to be making that big move. So I think, you know, that we do have a lot of people who don't want to relocate, and you know, they're happy where they are. We should be able to accommodate that, particularly a kind of a bigger agency. And we just have to look at, I think, how we're training. So we have implemented things where you kind of like you force that situation where you overhear it. So, you know, we do things like we do a whole lot more role playing than we used to do, and reverse role playing, where, you know, we just did one that went down very well, where the trainees got to be the angry client, you know, and they were kind of given a role play and they gave more senior people a hard time and saw how they dealt with it, you know, rather than kind of putting somebody on the spot and asking them to try and handle a difficult client. So, you know, you've kind of got to think about where the gaps are. And so our L&D programs, of which we have several, are constantly evolving, as we kind of, you know, these things are popping up as gaps in people's development because they're remote.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
One of the things I always think is interesting when I hear conversations like this is that I don't think we've particularly done it, but it often happens that that generalizations are made. You know, the older generation, you know, of the workforce have houses and gardens and want to stay at home and whatever, and the youngsters want to come into the office because they're in a bedsit or in their parents' house or whatever. Well, in my experience, and the surveys we've done actually over the last couple of years seem to back it up, it's incredibly individual. You know, you've got an older person who really doesn't want to be at home in their lovely house and all the rest of it and wants to be in the office. You've got the younger folk who go, why on earth did you commute 2 hours a day to a, you know, I can do everything off the back of a mobile phone. It's so individual. I had one guy, I always remember a conversation with a guy who runs an agency, maybe let's call it, I don't know, it's under 30, let's call it 30 odd people anyway. So it's not a big agency. But I remember going back, it's a good 18 months or so, I suppose. And he said, Peter, it's all very well. We're asking people how they want to work. We're trying to do the right thing. But I've now got 30 people telling me they want to work in different ways. As an organization, I'm struggling because I can't keep all the people happy all the time. And I those sort of, I mean, speaking of someone who doesn't have an organization and run a bunch of, I find it fascinating to think how it works within an organization to try and keep everybody happy. And yes, you can't keep everybody happy, but there's an awful lot of effort going into trying to keep people happy. Again, Joe, just on that sort of a point, have you got some stories or insights as to how people tackle that sort of an issue?
I think it is a challenge, and I completely agree that you're never going to be able to have everybody completely happy. And I do think, there seems to be what we're hearing is the sort of maybe 2 days in the office, 3 days, working from home or working remotely, and then, having a day where it's almost, not necessarily compulsory, but, encouraged that people are in the office or particular teams are in the office so they can get that interaction. And I think it's around having those conversations and asking people what they want. I think where a lot of companies have come into challenges is where they have asked their people and then gone completely against that. And that is where you're going to get problems. And I think there is also picking up on the kind of relocation point that both Elena and Andrew have made is that, I think a lot of people did move out of London during the pandemic without sort of generalizing, and then, to then want them back in 5 days a week, that's going to be a challenge as well. So yeah, I think it's about a compromise. And there's some quite interesting research coming out, or surveys coming around about what the role of the office will be. So will the office be the kind of off-site where you do get people together to do the more collaboration, more getting people together, generating ideas, etc., rather than just saying we want you in the office for the sake of it, and you've got some people on a screen and other people on a screen in the office. So I think there's some work there perhaps about, how you use that differently. And is it around, some of those training opportunities, whether that's formal or informal. So using the office in that way, and making it available for, perhaps there are people that want to be in more than those 2 days, and saying, well, you absolutely can be. If that's what you want.
There's so many directions we could go in and so many points we could pick up in much more depth. I just wanted to go possibly a slightly different direction and just talk about diversity, inclusivity of the workforce as a generalization. But, with the remote working, with the changing working practices, with the fact that people need not come into the office, so have to commute 2 hours a day on buses and trains, whatever, presumably it's the logic is we should be opening up to far more people than we used to. It should be more inclusive and diverse a workforce. Okay. And there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of years. In Medcom circles, there's been a lot of agencies talking about the fact they want to do it. I'm not sure how far we've progressed down that line. And I just wonder, I don't know, Elena, from where you sit, do you think we are making progress? We've made as much progress as we should have done. I know there's a slightly flippant side to this question again, but how do you observe that sort of aspect of these sorts of issues?
Yeah, I
See what I
mean, like
mean?
we've said, if we're trying to have a more diverse junior base that are coming through the ranks, again, that we've talked about how that can be tricky if you're not in the office. So I'm not sure the remote work per se is going to drive diversity. That said, the way we've worked with a remote team is that we are hopefully bringing more experienced med comms professionals who'd perhaps left traditional agency life. It was too intense. The commuting wasn't working for them. The hours weren't working for them. So I guess we were trying to stem a bit of a brain drain almost. And it does seem to be working. And it was just a hunch of Liz and I, really, that we could be providing a workplace that worked for women. Particularly with caring responsibilities, but actually, that's it. Lots of people have got responsibilities outside in their personal life that make it difficult to work in a traditional office-based agency environment. But yeah, I think there's work to be done in opening up Medcoms in general to a more diverse audience. I think there's lots of ways we can work at the careers level, the early talent teams in particular. I think have an opportunity there to open up Medcoms, and we should see those people coming through.
Yeah, I
And
agree.
Andrea, at an organisation like yours, I mean, you've got committees of people working on diversity and inclusivity and that sort of thing. I mean, how do you see things from where you sit?
We have. Yes, we do have an EDI council who do a lot of education and for those of us who are already in the organisation. I agree completely with everything that Elena just said. So I don't think remote working per se actually makes that much difference in terms of inclusivity. I think it enables people to stay in the industry probably more than anything else, and it enables people to do things like get into the industry but not move. But in terms of actually making the workforce more inclusive, it is around the sort of initiatives that our talent acquisition team do in partnership with our EDI council, which is around which universities we target, actually not and but not even just looking at the universities, but also we do some outreach to schools as well. So you kind of you get people before they're even thinking about what they're going to do as their degree. I mean, when I got into Medcoms, I went the agency I started at was the only agency that would give me a job, because it was a classic catch-22 situation of everybody wants experience, nobody's prepared to give you a job to get it. Which was one of the reasons that we started taking trainees in the first place at Cordex, was because we recognised that there was this untapped pool of people. But it's only recently that we've started taking people without a higher degree. So we've had some associates who've come writing side. This is not on the client services side, but the writing side, we've had a couple of associate writers come in who have a first degree. And generally they might have done a kind of a sandwich course or got a bit of experience and what have you. But I think that's still quite unusual that you don't have a higher degree and you're going into medical writing. And so I think really I've always sort of said, if we need to make a change and make it more inclusive, by the time we're recruiting, it's kind of too late, because we have requirements, and you can look at it like nobody wants to get on a bus that's driven by somebody who's only got a motorbike license. We have requirements in terms of what people's skill set is, and that means it's generally people who've got a degree. So what we need to do is see how we can influence the people that are going into that university, and what we can do in terms of outreach for, say, for schools, and some people are involved in like mentoring. People in schools who, and kind of people who don't really have the access to that kind of mentoring or have that kind of home life where they've got parents who are supportive of them necessarily going off to university or anything. So I think it's a bit of a slow burn, is the honest answer.
I'd agree.
And I would hope that we will see things changing, and remote working is going to be part of that puzzle.
Okay. Yeah, we ought to keep one eye on the clock because we're going to run out of time. But Joe, maybe can you just give us some obs well, follow that with some observations about how
I
maybe
think
the workplace is changing.
my observation would be remote working or flexibility isn't enough to change, your diversity or inclusion. But if you haven't got it, it is. And I think there are some other sort of groups, which, there's some sort of evidence that says there's more access to the workplace for people that might have a physical disability or, literally cannot travel. I think the point about returners was a really interesting one. And, what I'd add into that is the challenge for women who are, going through the menopause, which, often means, been in office space, that's a massive challenge. So I think that's another area that, is helpful. But I agree with, the whole thing about caring responsibilities and, looking at inclusivity in different ways to the obvious ways. So whether that's, social exclusion and exclusion, And really thinking about, I really like Andrea, the point you made, once we're recruiting, it's kind of too late. So, thinking about, okay, what is it that we need within the organization, and how are we precluding people that might be, fantastic employees?
Yeah, so what can we do to get people to support them so they can get to the stage where they are, they are able to come in and with the kind of the skill set that we need? Because, we do, while we have a really good training scheme, it's like the medical writers, we're treating them to be medical writers, but they need to have a reasonable grasp of grammar and able to write. They need to have a basic understanding of science. They need to be able to manage data, and then on top of that, you've got to have interpersonal skills so you can deal with clients. It's a big skill set you're looking at when you're looking at the people in med comms.
And there's so many points in there we could talk about. One of the points that there at the end, how much has changed in terms of, people dealing with clients? You threw in there at the end, Andrea. Dealing with clients today is very different than it was when I was dealing with clients and grew up. I mean, I was sent on a plane to Basel or wherever and walked the corridors and whatever it was. It's just a completely different environment. Maybe we shouldn't go too far down this line because there's just so many things in here we could talk about. One of the things that keeps going through my head, which I sort of wanted to throw in, was I've been part of very, very long discussions in situations like this about the right way of sort of teaching somebody or how should someone email? What should we, should people, I think one or two of you said about emailing out of hours. Well, what's out of hours if you're in a global business? I mean, I find those sorts of discussions fascinating, but there's a lot of concern about how to support people to manage workload. And part of that in this day and age is just managing the ridiculous amount of email we have. Personally, I'm not so sure it's as simple as just going, don't email outside of work hours. But I know there's lots of discussion around this.
That, and in
So there's
fact,
all sorts of things we could
that
talk about
came
in there.
up at the HR forum actually that we that you ran in May, and I think it is about everyone needs to know where the boundaries are. If there's if there's different ways of doing things within the same organization, of course it's going to create confusion. So there needs to be a certain understanding amongst the people that are in your team of how that company would like to run it. And I think everyone likes boundaries, everyone likes to know. And we've tried hard as a remote agency to get that balance right. And remote agencies, virtual agencies, and there are a few, it's not a walk in the park. It's a different type of culture you're trying to build, and where do you where can you come together and have those touch points? And yeah, we try to work within boundaries is what we're saying, and so everyone knows how to do it.
But not, okay, so but the problem with it is you can work it out as a company how you want to work, and everyone in the company goes, right, we're going to play, but you're all dealing with other companies and other individuals, and they have their own ways of doing things. So there's always these conflicts and these points at which it's just like chaos in the middle because it's not quite working. I find all that absolutely fascinating. One of my one of my lines is I just think conversations like this, we could talk about almost anything. A conversation like this will just give us food for thought, and people listening to this hopefully will get food for thought. They might agree or disagree with some of what we've said, but maybe that if we just think about it more and talk together, and I'm a great one for saying within Medcoms, let's talk more about what we're doing in different places and all just learn from each other a little bit. So we're over time as always. Okay, look, I'd love to keep going, but I'm gonna draw a line to this. I'm gonna say a huge thank you to you guys for jumping online with us. I know I can speak for you and say anybody watching this today or on the video later can contact you via LinkedIn is the easy way. And I would encourage them to do so. So let's keep these discussions going. Talk online, hashtag MedComms. I'm always keen to get people talking online. And if you want to know more about what I'm doing, MedComsNetworking.com. But just for the moment, I'm going to ask you all to give us a bit of a wave. But audience, don't run away because we can carry on talking for a few minutes there. Okay, so bye-bye and thank you very much. Take care. Bye.
Bye.